having a meeting, and then we got into it on the recall because we just did check-ins in our meeting, and Shelly is feeling agitated about the recall. And then we decided to put our mics on, and now we're going to try and recreate the recall rant that we had about 10 minutes ago.
We're going to try to recall the recall.
Total no. Recall recall. That's so, what we should name it. Total recall recall.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so I am a California resident, Shelly here. And, you know, we've all been in this frenzy leading up to this, you know, obviously terrible effort from the right wing to recall a terrible governor for very different reasons than we think he's terrible, Gavin Newsom. And, you know, just put the left in a really, really, really tough position. And
I don't think there was... get into it. Say what you wanted. Say what happened. Say why you were upset.
Okay. So I... was not sure what to do the whole time. I was very conflicted. I was very, you know, just kind of pissed off about the whole thing. But on the day of the recall, on Tuesday, it's now Friday, I voted no. I caved like a fucking chump. And I voted no out of fear of Larry Elder.
You know, it was a fearful thing. We did not want that motherfucker to be our governor. So it was real. And they put that machine into action. So this is Caitlin. I voted yes. And it literally was at the last second. I was going to vote yes. But then I was just like, I don't want to be a bad person. And I see all of these people that I respect who are working to protect or are amongst the most precarious people in California. And they're all saying that we have to vote no. But my feeling when I had wanted to vote yes was like, fuck this motherfucker. I don't, you know, it's like, yes, the whole recall was done in a fucked up way and all of that. But at the same time, fucking Gavin Newsom has just, he lies. He talks out of both sides of his mouth on everything. Climate change, pandemic, motherfucker with his like parties telling us, you know, while we're all on lockdown, motherfucker with not delivering Medicare for all, which is like the whole point of why he's governor, because the fucking nurses got him in there and the Democratic Party blocking it. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, there's like tweets from 2017 that everyone's bringing up where he was just like, very, very, very clear in his support for single payer.
He promised behind closed doors and publicly that he would deliver it. And that is why he is in that seat. And then all the housing shit, which we're going to talk more about, you know, so it's like he's terrible. He's fracking the shit out of the state, you know, and so it's like, I'm not going to fucking support that asshole. But then what the other side had was terrifying. And I think your point, Jessica, about where you're a California native, but not living there. But in terms of what happened in Texas and the flavor that that gave us all right as we went into this election.
Yeah. So I don't live in California. I live in Nevada now, but I'm from California and all my family's there. And so, you know, I just kept hearing that it was going to be really close. And I see a lot of my like super conservative anti-choice family really turning out for like against Gavin Newsom for the recall. And I got scared. Like the abortion shit in Texas is super real. And I was like, dude, if this guy gets in, that could like mean real things for abortion. And it scared me because I didn't think that it was going to be such a landslide situation. It wasn't being talked about like that, or I didn't hear it that way. So I called my mom, who doesn't usually vote unless I really compel her. And she was like, I was like, I feel like you should vote in this. Like, it seems like it's going to be maybe an important one. And, you know, Texas is scary. And she was like, yeah, okay. So that's where I was at. I actually didn't know that like leftists were voting yes on the recall. And I was kind of surprised to hear that. I just didn't hear that perspective.
I think we all, like we said this earlier, I think we all kept it right. to ourselves, you know, because mm-hmm. it was like, there's no good answer here. Motherfucker does not deserve our support. And at the same time, what I was really worried about and why I was thinking that I was going to vote no up until the last day. And really, just to be the only reason why I voted yes is because I checked with my partner on what the polling was, and it was clear that he was going to win. And it was like, all right, then I just was like, doing it. And it was like a very like, fuck this kind of feeling as I circled the, or, you know, filled in the yes bubble.
I've done that before.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, mm-hmm. But anyways, I was worried about what would happen with pandemic stuff, because the reason, Brad, my partner, he voted yes all along, and I appreciate the whole way that we went about it, because it was like, I didn't feel like I was like compelled by him or, mm-hmm. you know, made to feel like a dumb liberal, but I also didn't try to convince him either. It was just nice. But yeah. we talked about it a lot. And the reality is the legislature in California wasn't going to let Larry get away with like turning this into some like red state, you know, situation. But governors have a ton of say over pandemic mandates and how all that goes down. And so that seemed to me like a really real thing of like, oh, my God, what if everything just gets reversed? And then all of a sudden, you know, we become like the hotbed of like new variants because stupidity just took over our state for the short term.
And for me, you know, what I do in my community is I work with people who live outside every weekend. Me and my partner go out and, you know, serve encampments. And it's already very, very, very bad. I mean, you know, we're nationally famous for our homelessness problem. And, you know, Larry Elder's, you know, messaging on that was, oh, I'm just going to eliminate it. So basically he was just going to, I mean, I don't know what he was, you know, but he was just going to make it go away, whatever that means. And it's terrifying. And that was kind of what really like, but at the same time, my partner who does the same thing I do and cares about it, and this, he refused to participate in this. And I decided at the last minute, but we had the same dynamic where we didn't judge each other or try to convince each other. And I feel like that was kind of the general vibe of the left, like just do whatever you need to do that feels right, because there is not a right or wrong answer to this.
Although they did turn on that guilt. They did turn on, you know, like those of, I felt it. I felt, and it got me for a little while, you know. I mean, one was the logic of what I said earlier about the pandemic and what you're saying about, you know, the immediate threat to certain populations. But also, you know, it was like in the last couple weeks, progressives really leaned in hard for vote no. And, you know, I mean, I'm a progressive in many ways. I'm like progressive adjacent, right? You know, it's like we all are. It's like there's not a clear line. So it's like people that I work with and trust and whose opinions I value started to really throw all in, work, phone bank, shit like that, you know? And it was like, okay, well, I don't want to be some kind of bomb throwing asshole.
Yeah, that's a familiar feeling, right?
Right. I mean, we're ultimately of the mind that this entire rotten fucking system that allowed us to even be in this position needs to be overthrown. And so that's the tension, is like participating in it.
And there's places for harm reduction, but then also mm-hmm. too much harm reduction forever and ever and ever is how the fucking elites get us.
And how the movement, energy, and resources gets refunneled into the electoral system.
Totally.
This is like a critical moment in like where that goes. And it always goes back into the electoral right. system. And here we fucking are again.
So what I wanted to see happen with my no vote was kind of a barely win. Mm-hmm. And I wanted them to sweat a little bit. But I did want to ultimately prevent Elder from taking office, but I did not want it to be this just like, I mean, it was called within like 20 minutes or something. It was so fast, and that I did not love. That was not what I wanted. I did not want to embolden and fucking give them that level of confidence in what they're doing. And they know that, like, people, you know, who were very reluctantly came out to bail them out, but they're not going to.
They're not gonna give us anything.
No.
Nope.
No. And all the people, like we were saying this early in our meeting too, like all of the people who are saying, okay, now we're going to get what we want out of him because now.
Right. The next day, the email blasts come out. Okay, Newsom, yeah. We saved your ass. Now
we're really gonna,
yeah,
gonna
what universe
make you do it.
And so yeah, I feel like I'm not doing that. I'm not gonna fucking tag Gavin Newsom in a post. I would feel like a clown because it's not real. That's not, we don't have leverage. We do not have it.
We leverage.
Gave them what they needed, and we will get a sack of shit in return. So I immediately
tell us the specifics of the sack of shit though.
Okay, so the first sack of shit to come down the pike after Gavin gets bailed out and is now safe in his office of governor. I started to feel the regret pretty much immediately. Like, wait a second, I did not want it to be a landslide, but okay. And then yesterday, which was Thursday, there were two different things happening at the same time. One was getting way more attention. But one of the things that Newsom campaigned on went really hard on, particularly around the time that the federal eviction moratorium drama was going on and it did ultimately get lifted, and the California moratorium was through the end of September this month. And what Gavin did was, you know, get on Twitter and everywhere else and just reassure everybody, if you're a Californian, this doesn't impact you. And not only are you protected through the end of September, but we have this robust rent relief program. It's huge. And the thing is he's right. That program was robust and it was huge. It has a lot of money, still has a lot of money. But the reality is, at the time that he was saying that, and apparently up until yesterday, not much has changed. Only 20%-ish of the applicants have received any relief. So, and then not only that, it's a very high barrier application process. I was reading things that were saying that, like, you have to get, like, on the fourth page of the application to get an option to not do it in English. So you just think about how many people are
holy
just
shit.
What the fuck?
Yeah, that's just off the top.
In California.
Give up. In California. Okay. So
wait
if you
minute,
were
wait
able.
Wait a minute. How, like, just pause for a minute. I had no idea about this. So in what universe could anybody make the argument that that is not, like, basically, like, a poll test or something like that for anybody
right.
who's not an English speaker?
Right.
You know? I mean, it's like,
yeah.
it
yeah.
is that you can't say, oh, whoops, we missed that. We didn't realize, we didn't think of that. If what you're saying is true, then that's just straight up a way to be like, how do we make sure that a huge population that might need this doesn't have access?
Right.
How can you say that that is in service of Californians if it's not in Spanish?
Or
what
Hmong,
the fuck?
Or, you know, there's just so many widely spoken languages here.
Come on.
It says, wait, just two, it says, just for, like, people who are not familiar with California, 39% of the state are Latinx.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I mean, just to think how many people are Spanish-speaking and that puts a barrier to is extreme.
Yeah. So right off the top, the just huge barriers that probably precluded, who knows, untold numbers of people desperately needing help. And then for those who were able to get through the process, you know, you had a 1 in 5 chance, I guess, of getting the help that you needed in time. So now we have 2 weeks left before the moratorium is lifted, and only 20%-ish of this funding has been dispersed. And once the moratorium ends, that money, you're not eligible for that money if you get evicted, right? It's only for staying in your house. And all that money is basically going to get forfeited. So this whole program was a farce. It's not real. It's not doing anything. And we're about to have a huge crisis. In 2 weeks,
we
are going to have...
One.
We already have.
On top of the one that already, exists. Oh, there are more homeless people in Sacramento under every fucking nook and cranny of the freeway. It's like full. There are no vacant spots that do not have homeless, like not just here and there, you know, like towns.
The moratorium is so flimsy anyway because landlords can make up any excuse they want to evict someone as long as they don't say it's, you know,
because you didn't pay.
Related to the money not paid under COVID.
There's that. Yeah,
like they could just say you're.
And then they could still threaten you. And if you don't know your rights or feel like you have support, you're going. A lot of times, you know, it's like there's a lot of people who fully have the legal right to stay in their housing, but they don't realize it and they don't have the support that they need. So they just end up doing what the landlord says. So a lot of evictions happen, you know, unofficially and illegally.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, because the landlords know, what are these people going to do? By the time anybody figures out if they even do, they don't have the resources to stop me.
So LA Times comes out yesterday with an article explaining the state of this program, and which is terrible, which has barely changed since a month ago when Newsom was touting it in his, you know, bid to stay. But what got a lot more attention yesterday was his move. Gavin Newsom basically said that single family zoning could be converted into multifamily. And, you know, this was put out as, like, you know, revolutionary policy change. And, like, it's good. It's fine, right? But it's not going
to
stop.
How does that help anybody who's about to be evicted in 2 weeks?
It
That's
doesn't.
One question. I mean, yeah, like, that does nothing in any sort of immediate crisis way.
But there's a lot of people in California who, you know, think that is awesome and that's great. And I just want to talk about these people, the YIMBYs. So YIMBY stands for Yes in My Backyard. And it sounds great. And it is, you know, obviously a response to NIMBYs, who are No in My Backyard. So No in My Backyard, NIMBY people are the ones who show up to any thing that has to do with, you know, letting poor or working class people live in higher end areas, and will fight any kind of development for affordable housing because they don't want it anywhere near them. YIMBYs, this is the kind of the neoliberal middle way of looking at the housing crisis, and it's also just hilarious sometimes. These people, they are very, very pro affordable housing in, you know, and building more densely, you know, dense housing in it. They're okay with it being in their backyard. They don't mind. They're fine with it. And then there is the people who believe housing is a human right, don't want to see evictions happen, and want more public housing, you know, rent control and things like that. So So the YIMBYs are in the middle. They're fighting the NIMBYs, and they're also pushing back on the left, who are trying to, you know, do more fundamental, you know, just more visionary systemic change around housing, not just building some, like, oh, $1,200 three bedrooms or something that is near a nicer area.
Well, and Newsom's solution, I mean, while on one hand it's like we do need more multifamily housing, like we do need, the zoning is part of the problem, but on the other hand, who that at the end of the day will most benefit, it materially benefits landlords, and it materially incentivizes people who have the means to become landlords. So maybe they're not already landlords, but now they're going to become landlords because they have the money to turn their single family house and add an addition or a mother-in-law or something like that, and then they become landlords. And so it's like, it's a solution. It's like, It is more systemic than everybody should just be homeless, you know, fuck them. But it also is like, hey, let's make sure that the solution actually is financially beneficial to my class. And then so, of course, they're like, this sounds great. And there'll be more housing. I'll just own it all.
Right. And this, you know, it's the same thing. It's going to allow, like, you know, apartment complexes and things like that to be built in areas where they previously couldn't, and all of that. So this is all definitely going to enrich the owning class while making some, you know, some more options for lower income people. But it does not help homeless people. It doesn't you know, it doesn't do anything about this crisis. And it's anyway, but the Yankees are really funny. It doesn't give people
housing security. You know what I mean? It's like, isn't that the real issue? It's like, we need housing security. Having more houses that other people own doesn't give people housing security.
Right. Exactly. So public housing, you know, they don't talk about that, right?
I can see, though, I just want to say, like, I can see how that's sometimes a phase that people move through in understanding this, right? Because I don't think you... I think it's hard. It takes time and experience and knowing people and being a little bit in the work to understand that housing justice is different. Because I think there's a lot of people in that YIMBY category, maybe, who, or somewhere in between, who are just like, there's homeless people, let's get them in a bed tonight. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And we need more like, houses.
That makes sense. And so.
But actually, turns out we have enough houses in this country to house people like seven times over or whatever. But people don't know that.
Yeah, people don't know. And so I'm just saying, like, I think there's – I have done – I in my, like, getting to know – because I didn't come from, like, housing, activism, organizing background. Like, you come into that – I came into that through other work. And sometimes you meet people and then you get to learn what's actually, like, the justice piece and what's solutions that are – in the long term, not helping anyone. And so I'm just acknowledging that that is like a reasonable phase to move through, but hopefully moving through it to understanding like more systemic
and solutions. Absolutely. And people in power like Gavin Newsom are not going to, you know, like this discourse isn't a discourse that most people who probably come from a YIMBY perspective and political framework and who they're surrounded by, it's like it's nobody's interjecting a sort of question of like, okay, but what about people actually having the right to housing and looking at it that way rather than just we need to materially get people in houses, it's okay if somebody else owns them, not understanding the systemic precariousness that creates for renters.
Jessica is completely right that there are a lot of people who are seeing this as a really positive thing, who, you know, whose hearts are in the right place, and if they were more educated would probably be movable to the housing as a human right. But there's also the irredeemably fucking pompous liberals who I don't have any hope whatsoever. And I just want to read a tweet so folks can kind of get an idea of the mentality of the people who make being a YIMBY their identity, because there are people who are just very passionately YIMBY. So this account is NIMBY Patrol. So they're anti-NIMBY. And this comment says, "Some might say I'm a YIMBY, but I'm just a rational person who doesn't hate poor people. I don't get paid for being a decent human being."
No, but you should.
"I do get to sleep well at night knowing that I'm not a terrible person who celebrates the suffering of others."
You get paid in sleep.
God, that must feel good.
So these are the same people who are saying absolutely fucking nothing about the impending eviction crisis that, you know, well, that is already happening.
Shelly, they're busy sleeping. Oh, God.
Okay, what if we kind of left it there with the sort of conclusion of... going back to like how I think what the core of it is like, Shelly, your chump feeling of like, God damn it. They tricked us. They fucking tricked us to turn all out and go all in. And organizations that are supposedly working to, you know, move the Democratic Party left didn't demand a fucking thing from Newsom in return for having his back. The Green Party, you know, like, didn't have any kind of candidate, didn't have any sort of, you know, we all kind of kept our mouths closed. We uncomfortably decided what to do, but we were trying to be team players. And it's like, what is that team playerness going to get us? Fucking absolutely nothing. And it seems like nobody's even learning that lesson, because the day after the election, our email boxes are full with all the organizations telling us, "Hey, now that we got you to do the right thing, we're going to rally the troops and we're going to make him comply."
Yeah. I mean, and it's not
so absurd.
It's not
like, thing. Do you not understand how to use I'm banging on the counter. How to use power.
He had to feel safe first. Is this how you parent? Before he could help us, okay? He had to feel real safe in office. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's
true. We don't want the people in power feeling threatened or scared.
You know, that is the only way to ever make them ever do anything is if they are fucking terrified of us. And yet, let's make sure that never happens.
So this is why the left should have been more organized on the front end for, but because also, even if it had been close, it could have been interpreted as, oh, there's a real and present threat from the right wing. So we don't lose it. We might need to move to the right a little bit. Mm-hmm. To try,
which is probably absolutely what they would have done. That's what they would have done. But it's at some point.
But you know who's not sleeping? We're not sleeping. We don't have time for that. Like, honestly, though, who on the left was okay, they're doing this thing. We should pick up and we're going to, oh my God, I can't speak for everyone, but that sounds exhausting to try to organize a fucking campaign on this Gavin Newsom recall.
Was why it didn't happen, right? You know? But what's weird to me is that there are particular folks who have been trying to, I haven't been involved in California politics. So on one hand, I'm over here, talking from the outside. But it is odd to me that the people who have been fighting for Medicare for All, who helped instill Gavin Newsom, I'm talking about the nurses union, it's they made sure he got elected because he made a promise to them. And he hasn't delivered. And it's why wasn't that leveraged used? It's I'm not trying to just spitball from the outside, but it's I thought you guys had that front covered. I trust you to have that front covered because you're the people who are working on this. And thank you. And I support you when I can. And so, I trust that when an opportunity comes along where you could push him because he's vulnerable, and he can't just rest on his laurels like he turns out he has done since he's been elected. That's your opportunity. And it's just crazy to me that, and there's other, it's not to put it all on them, but that one's a big one because that one's so blatant. It's he said he was for it. The fucking legislature. We have the votes in the California legislature. There's no excuse. And this is the opportunity to say, okay, motherfucker, you want something from us? This is what we want from you. You know what it is. You, in fact, already told us you would deliver it.
So disappointing and unstrategic, and also the role, of DSA we touched on a little earlier.
Yeah, you'd think. DSA. But also, I think the Green Party, it's this is what an independent party could do too, and it's just, it's fucking agitating that we are so unstrategic that we can't leverage these moments. And a lot of us don't have the resources, right? That's part of it. It's our movements, you said, Jessica, it's exhausting because we're already putting everything in just to kind of fill a couple holes in the dike. But there are organizations that do have resources. There are organizations that do have resources.
You just said fill holes in the dike and you just move on, and you expect us to just sit here with that? What the fuck?
I'm talking about a dam.
You just Oh, me too. No, me too.
All right. Well, don't you think that we maybe could leave it there? Except for a story about a dress. Let's just throw it in there just in case.
Okay, so of course we have to talk about
a dress.
The dress. Yeah.
Do you guys the dress? Do you remember when Facebook was pretty new to me, and everybody was trying to figure out whether the dress was navy blue or gold?
Yes, I do.
It was a big deal about the dress.
Do you want to know why I remember that day so clearly? It's cool because I'll never forget that it was I think it was February 26th or something, 2015. was the day of the dress discourse, because my co-parent, who we were together at the time, we're not now, we're sitting in the bed and I was pregnant, and we started arguing because we saw it differently. I saw white and gold, he saw black and blue, and I felt my kid's first kick that day. So I
appreciate... Paul was trying to tell you what color he saw.
You know what? I need to ask him. I need to ask him. I'm doing that tonight. I'm going to ask him what he saw and whose side he was really on there.
All right, cool.
That's all the have. Dress discourse that we are going to do today.
We have no that's interest all in the any other dresses. About.
All right, thank you for tuning in. You can sign up for our email list so you can get a notification whenever a new episode drops. Sign up to get notified at agitatedpodcast.com. You can also leave us your feedback under the Contact Us section of the website.
Don't forget, we've got stickers. If you'd like one, drop us a line with your address through any of our social media channels or the website. And speaking of social media, we'd love to connect with you there. You can find us at Agitated Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Please don't forget to subscribe and rate us 5 stars on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to podcasts. And if you would, leave a positive review on iTunes. It really helps the algorithm bump our podcast and new people find us on our show.
And please share us with your friends. Podcasts like ours grow through word of mouth. So thank you for your support. And a big thanks to Jason and Radical Guide for helping us produce this show and Alfonso for helping us with promotion. See you next time. The pain will make you cry.